Hello, this is Gideon Rothstein, and this is a response of a day for the 5th of Tevet. It's going to be a tshuva from Rav Yaakov Ettlinger, who was the Rebbe, who was the teacher of both Rav Israel Hildesheimer and Rav Samson Raphael Hirsch. So Rav Samson Raphael Hirsch is the founder of the Torah and Derech Eretz movement, and Rav Israel Hildesheimer was the sort of forerunner of a very famous Berlin rabbinical school that was, in a sense, also sort of a Torah Derech Eretz, or a Torah in the modern world kind of a movement. He also attended university and was among the earliest, according to Wikipedia, but I think this is accurate, among the earliest German rabbis who had some academic training. So he's an interesting guy, and we don't often get a chance to study from him because the truth is I look at the tshuvot when they come up in the Bar Ilan. Often, and they're very often technical about sugyot in the Talmud rather than about halakhic issues, and therefore not the kind of thing that I feel comfortable communicating in an effective way. But when it came to the 5th of Tevet, he had a follow-up tshuva to a topic he had dealt with that I think we can study with some profit. So this from, it starts with a tshuva actually from the 4th of Tishrei of Tafresh Gimel, so the very beginning of the Jewish year of Tafresh Gimel, which was 1852, and then there'll be a follow-up tshuva in Kufayin Gimel, the next response in the book, which is from the 5th of Tevet of that same year. So the 4th of Tishrei tshuva talks about the fact that he had already discussed in another place the question of Gezel b'makom b'kiruach nefesh, the question of can you steal to save a life. This was when I was growing up, a question people would always raise. You know, let's say a man has a wife who's ill, and the medicine is in a pharmacy, and the man who owns the pharmacy isn't willing to sell it to him. Can he break into the pharmacy and steal it? And people talk about it as a moral problem and a moral issue. So he discussed that elsewhere. It's a topic, it's an interesting topic, and it'll be for another time. But he had claimed, he thinks it's a machloket rishonim, which I think is true. My memory is that Rashi seems to hold that you're not allowed to steal, whereas almost everybody else thinks you're allowed to steal, you just have to pay it back. And that's a whole different topic. But now he wants to talk about something else. He says related, but not the exact same thing. Can you save yourself? Can a person save themselves from death? That they embarrass somebody else, and he means in public. And we'll talk about in the second tshuva, I'll talk about what qualifies as public for these purposes. But he means, can you embarrass somebody in public? So why would you think you couldn't? Don't we think, and this is, I think, sometimes an error that people make, don't we think that pikuach nefesh is docheta kol, pushes aside everything? It's true that it pushes aside Shabbos, other than the three terrible crimes, and we'll get to discussing those sins in a second. But other than that, you can eat pork, you can violate Shabbos, you can do all sorts of things to save your life. So he says, but I have a Gemara in Bava Metzia and in Chet Amid Bet, which says, if you embarrass somebody in public, it's like you're killing them. And if so, then just like when it comes to killing, we say you're not allowed to kill other people to save your life. We say it's a yehereg val yavor. It's one of the three sins that we say under all circumstances, you're a person, a Jew, is required to allow themselves to be killed rather than to transgress that sin. So maybe that's true about halbanat panim. Now, I want to point out, he'll get to it a little bit by inferentially, but halbanat panim, the phrase means causing somebody else's face to go white. That's what he doesn't discuss here, but would be important for this conversation. Once he's going to assume, as he will end up doing, that we are not supposed to, or we're not allowed to save ourselves by embarrassing other people in public, the question is, what counts as embarrassment? Right, because the phrase in the Gemara is halbanat panim. Halbanat panim means causing their face to go white from embarrassment. So that would be a topic to pick up, especially as a halachic issue. If I'm going to say that there's a halacha that one is not allowed to embarrass somebody else in public, there doesn't have to be malbin pnei chaveru barabim, even at the cost of one's own life, it will become important halachically, not just as a matter of Jewish thought, but halachically, it becomes important to know what qualifies as halbanat panim. Does the face have to go white? So the Rabbeinu Yonah has an explanation that I think he gets to. So if he gets to, I'll skip to it and get there. Rabbeinu Yonah says it's called halbanat panim. It's considered like murder because when the blood rushes away from somebody's face out of embarrassment, then without blood, people die. So it's close to murder in that sense. If you take that as a halachic matter, that would mean that if somebody gets embarrassed, and it doesn't mean it's allowed, it's good to do, but it means if the kind of embarrassment that somebody is, they blush, then that's not halbanat panim, that's heart of ha'adamat panim, and that makes them maybe even more alive in some sense. So that would be an important question, but it doesn't come up here so much. So his first point is, Gemara Bava Metzia seems to say that halbanat panim is like murder. If it's like murder, then you shouldn't be able to do it, even to save a person, your own or somebody else's life. But he says that can't quite prove it because the Gemara says elsewhere that bizui ma'ad hamo'adot, that mistreating chagim, in particular chol hamoed, is like worshipping avodah zarah. And then we would say also that that a person can't save himself, meaning, let's say, a non-Jew, for whatever reason, not for the purpose of making the Jew violate the Torah, because that's a whole different category, but the non-Jew wants the Jew to do something that's not appropriate for chol hamoed, and for whatever reason is so intensely into it, that he says, well, I'll kill you. Or another way is, let's suppose that being able to save one's life by refuah, by medication, right, going to the hospital, whatever one's to do for one's medical care, would require mistreating the mo'adot, however that could work. So you would think maybe mistreating the holidays, that you would think, according to this reasoning, the same thing. Since the Gemara compares being mevazeh et ha-mo'adot, mistreating the holidays, in particular chol hamoed, as being like avodah zarah, like alien worship, like worshiping other forces than Hashem, then you'd say, well, just like alien worship of Avodah Zarah, you can't do even at the cost of a person's life, so too, mevazeh ha-mo'adot. So he says, no, it can't be true. It must be. And this is something that he says, but not everybody would say. And then you'd have to figure out when or which. He says, sometimes Chazal say things and they mean it as hyperbole. And it doesn't necessarily, so when I say something is like something else, so Malbim Pnei Chaver Berabim is like Shvichut Tamim, is like killing. And the Gemara also says, "Bimivazeh tamoadot" is like worshiping avodah zarah. Rabbi Yaakov Ettinger says, "Well, you can't assume that when we say it like, we mean it in a technical halachic sense. They mean it maybe only in a moral sense. You should feel bad about it, but doesn't mean that if there's a halachic issue where that becomes an important question of how similar the comparison is, doesn't mean that you take it on as an exact comparison." Then he says, "But I have another source when it comes to embarrassing somebody in public, because I have a Gemara in Brachot." And elsewhere, in Brachot Mem Gimel, where Rav Yochanan says in the name of Shimon Yochai, that it would be better for a person to allow themselves or to throw themselves into a fire, into a furnace, rather than embarrassing somebody else in public. How does he know? Because of Tamar. Because the Pasuk says that he was mutsait. We're going to get to, since she was being taken out to be killed. Meaning when Tamar sees that nobody is marrying her. After Aaron Onan passed away, Yehudah says to his younger son, don't marry her yet, you'll wait. He tells her to wait. She waits, and nothing's happening. And she decides that something has to happen, so she goes and she lures Yehudah into having relations with her, and she gets pregnant, and everybody assumes that she had an inappropriate relationship for a widow who was supposed to be waiting for a yabam, for somebody to from the family to have relations with, to marry her. So they go to Yehudah. Yehudah says the halacha is, and that's all discussion of its own, she should be burned to death because if she committed adultery, however that works, not our topic today. But the Torah says that as she was being taken out to be killed, she sends Yehudah the evidence, and it was Yehudah himself who had been the father of the child. And then Yehudah says, you know what, she's right, and I'm wrong, and then she gets saved, and the children get born, and all those things happen. But the Gemara is picking up on the fact, Rabbi Shimon Yochai picks up on the fact that Tamar doesn't tell him what's going on. She doesn't announce what's going on. She just sends him a thing, and that the Gemara takes to mean that she would prefer to even let herself be killed than to embarrass Yehudah in public by just simply announcing that he had been the father of the children. Now, there's a discussion in the Rishonim that Rabbi Yaakov Ettinger sort of gets into a little bit as to how this proves anything. He accepts the reading of the Tosfot in Nida, no, I'm sorry, in Bava Metzia and Daf Nun Tet, that the answer is she sent him these items, the seal and the staff that he had given her originally. She sent it to him at a point when there wasn't enough time, that if she realized he wasn't going to confess, he wasn't going to own up to what he had done, that there wasn't going to be time for her to announce it and save her life in that way. And they do this because the other possibility is she just sent it to him first. Right? It makes it sound like she just sent him first rather than just announce it. And he says, that doesn't prove anything, he thinks, because that's true in lots of situations. Meaning, and he says, this is an important idea from a completely different topic, but that I've spoken with people about before and we don't always realize. When we say that you can kill a rodef, if somebody's chasing somebody else to kill the victim, we're allowed to save the potential victim by killing the potential murderer, that is only where we don't have other ways of doing it. Sort of like in the police, when you say you can't use deadly force unless that's the only way to save the victim, that's true in halacha as well. So here too, you might have just said, based on Rashi's reading of it, you might have just said, well, yeah, of course she had to try to do it quietly before she could do it forcefully and publicly, but maybe she was going to. So that's why Tosfos say no. They understand from the pasuk, from the fact that it says mutseit without an aleph, it sounds like she's already on the verge of being burnt, and yet she only uses a mechanism that would leave it up to Yehuda to decide whether he's going to admit it or not. In any case, that also proves that at least if we take Tamar as a halachic example, rather than as a lifnei mishurat hadin, rather than having done it, we'll see somebody else later on who says that she only did it because she was such a great righteous person, she was willing to sacrifice her life rather than embarrass him. But he's taking it as saying that the Gemara seems to be saying that it's true for everybody, because it says Noach lo la'adam, it's better for a person. You could have argued that Noach lo la'adam doesn't mean it's an obligation. You could have argued it means it's better and it's a higher standard. But in any case, he's taking it to mean that we see that embarrassing somebody else is more serious than pikuach nefesh, and therefore really a person shouldn't embarrass somebody else even at cost to their life. Then he says, and I found the Tosfos in Sota that says, so why isn't it counted among the three sins that one has to be killed rather than transgressed? Why isn't it, you know, why shouldn't the list be avodah zara, idolatry, alien worship, gilui ariot, sexual immorality, and shvichut tamim, and murder, and halvana panei chaver abarim? So Tosfos' suggestion in Sota was that it's not written explicitly in the Torah, and that list of three only includes those written explicitly in the Torah. If you bought that, and Rav Yaakov Endler is not going to buy that, I think, but if you bought that would mean that there might be lots and lots of examples of things that we're required to let ourselves be killed rather than transgress as observant, careful Jews. It's only that famous list that we all talk about is only because of it's what's written explicitly in the Torah. Rabbi doesn't accept that so much, first of all, because he thinks that not embarrassing somebody else is a pasuk in the Torah. The pasuk of Hochech Tochech Anabitecha, that we should remonstrate with each other when we see each other doing wrong things, which we often don't do anymore. But that verse ends with the phrase, Velotisa Alav Chet, which is understood halachically by the Rambam in Hilchot Deot to mean that when we are trying to remonstrate with people, we have to be very careful not to embarrass them. So that's a pasuk in the Torah, a verse in the Torah, that tells us that we're not allowed to embarrass other people. So we have to say instead that the intent is that Lotisa doesn't prove it completely about Halbanat Panim. But Rabbi Yonah has a different answer, which Rav Yaakov Endlinger seems to like better. In the third Chelek, in the third Sha'ar, the third section of Sha'arei Tshuvah, he talks about these three sins. In the third section of Sha'arei Tshuvah, which is very worth reading if you haven't yet done it, goes through the structure of mitzvot from less serious to more serious. It takes a while to learn. He goes on at some length about it, but it's a very careful presentation. So he starts with mitzvot to Rabbanan, which are in some sense the least serious of transgressions, or the least pressing obligations. He's at pains to say that we shouldn't think that means we can treat it lightly. And he goes from there all the way through all the kinds of mitzvot there are, all the way up to death penalty mitzvot, to karet, and then even above that, there's this category of mitzvot that you have to let yourself be killed rather than transgress. So that would be the three. But then Rabbeinu Yonah there, when he's discussing it, says that with these three, there's not only the original three averot, there's also what's called avak avera. There are things that are extensions of that sin, and those are included in the category of Yehoreg Val Yavor, even though they're not the original sin. So, a simple example and a reminder that Yehoreg Val Yavor, being killed rather than transgress, is not only when there's an outside person telling us, oh, you better sin or else I will kill you. It's even when the person who's going to have to be let themselves die has become ill, and the only way to cure them is in a way that would transgress one of these three things, or even not just transgress the one of the three things, but even the avak avera. So the example that Rabbeinu Yonah uses is, let's suppose, for whatever reason, that a person has to be cured or healed by atzei asherah. Right, so why would it be necessarily asherah? But it could be if you only have that wood, that's the only wood that's available. There was an asherah tree, and the asherah tree is a tree that people used to worship, and it's a form of idolatry, a form of alien worship that is not allowed for Jews, and you can't get any benefit from it. So the halacha is that even to use that tree as a medication for somebody who is deathly ill is not allowed. So that's not avodah zara, it's not alien worship, it's an avak avodah zara. Or there's an example in the Gemara and the medical background to this, I'm not sure what it would be. There's an example of the Gemara of a man who became so lovesick for a woman, and there's a whole discussion of what kind of woman it was, whether she was married or not married, but whatever it was, eventually the halacha in the Gemara is that even for him to have a conversation with her where he couldn't see her, was not allowed by the rabbi, by Chazal, the rabbis of the time, because it's considered an extension of Gilui Ariot. She was a woman who was prohibited to him, and therefore it would have been a Gilui Ariot relationship, would have been a sexual immorality relationship had they had relations with each other. But the doctors eventually said, well, we can try, not that they'll have relations, they'll just have a conversation. And they said, no. And they said, I'll have a conversation with my friends, he can't even see her. So, if that's true, it shows that, Rabbi Yonah says, it shows that not just the actual sins of these three, but their extensions as well. And then Rabbi Yonah says that an extension of murder is halbanat panim. And why is it halbanat panim? Ki panav yichavru. One answer is because his face goes white, and that's, like I said before, the blood rushing out. And then he gives a second one, is that the pain of being embarrassed is worse than death, and that's why, and then he quotes the Gemara that Rabbi Yaakov Endlinger pointed before, that a person should throw themselves in the fire or in a furnace rather than embarrass somebody in public. So by that comparison, it shows that he thinks that embarrassing in public is like murder, and then it becomes like a Yarek Vayav, or Rabbi Yoda seems to mean it in a halachic sense. I should also just pause to point out that if it's a question of the pain of embarrassment, then it might be a much lower standard than the face going white, meaning in our times, most people don't really go white from embarrassment. That would be a very, very serious embarrassment. Very often people just go red from embarrassment. The question would be, in our times, in our culture, what would be a level of embarrassment that qualifies as the pain that's so close to death that would be Arig Vayavar? I don't know that you can quantify that, or you can set, you know, like Vo Masmerot, you can make fixed rules about such things, but it's a reminder that we're talking about a very serious level of embarrassment. And if it came to, for whatever reason, a question of Yehorek Vayavar, for Yaakov Endlinger, it came to a situation where a person is actually going to die, either because somebody else is requiring them to do it, right? So let's say, you know, let's say, God forbid, there's an oppressor of some sort. There's a king, an evil king. The evil king comes up to a Jew and says, I want you to go and do X to so-and-so. And it's an embarrassing thing. So that will become, for Yaakov Endlinger, that becomes an important halakhic question of how embarrassing is it? If it's just a little embarrassing, maybe it's not a Yarek Vayavar, right? It's only halbanat pnei chavero, which either could mean literally the face has to go white, or it could just mean it's so embarrassing that it's painful like death. But you'd have to start talking about those kinds of issues. In any case, back to his topic, he says, you see, the Rabbi Yonah, as a halachic matter, compares the avak ritzicha to the ritzicha, to murder itself, and therefore it's also, he thinks, a Yarek Vayavar, as they learn it from Tamar. And then that would explain why it's not listed, right? Tosfos had asked that question, why is it not listed in the three? And Tosfos' answer was, because it's not written in an explicit verse. Rabbi Yaakov Endlinger might have thought it might have been an explicit verse, but he says you don't need it anymore because it's an extension of one of the three, and that's why it's not in the list, because it's really part of that list. And he points out that the Ramah in Yeridea, right, so that's in the halacha books, and I say this because people often think of certain things as being Jewish thought and nice ideas when they're actually halachic. Issues. They are actual issues of Jewish law, not all that much different than shaking a lulav, putting on tefillin, whatever, davening, all those things that we do and that we're clear on a halacha here too. So in Yoredea, there's a paragraph in Shulchan Aruch and Kuf Nun Zayin where the Ramah says, and any prohibition of avodah zarah, of alien worship, of idolatry, of gilui areot, of sexually inappropriate, of inappropriate sexual relationships, unacceptable sexual relationships, and shvichut damim, and murder. He says, even if they're only alav be'alma, they're only prohibitions that the Torah doesn't give prescribe the death penalty for those who transgress it, but just says this is a transgression of the Torah, which is serious, but not as serious. In this case, because it's part of this list, as we just said, it would be a harig val yavar. The person would have to be killed or let themselves die rather than transgress this. So the Ramah there gives examples of gilui ariot and avodah zarah, of inappropriate sexual relationships, and of alien worship, of idolatry, that is only a lav, but he doesn't give an example there of shvichud damim, of murder. But he mentions murder in the list. So the Rav Yaakov Endlinger says, maybe this is the example of a form of murder that's a lav, that's a regular prohibition, rather than a murder, a capital crime, and yet would fall in the category of Yehorek Baal Yavor, that we have to let ourselves be killed rather than transgress it. Now, what's considered Rabim? We often would think of, I think our instinct might be to say Rabim would be a minion. Right? So, for example, for Kiddush Hashem purposes, the Rambam seems to relate this idea of Yehorek Baal Yavor to Kiddush Hashem purposes. So, if it's Kiddush Hashem matter, you might have thought there have to be 10 Jews, including the person going to be killed, because Kiddush Hashem is something that happens in front of Jews. But Rav Yaakov Endlinger points out that, I think it's a Pnei Moshe, Might be a prima gadim. He has a pay mem. I'm just not sure which one he means. So he thinks that, actually, I think it's the Panim Me'irot. I'm sorry. The Panim Me'irot, who was Rav Meir Eisenstadt, who lived in the late 17th century, early 18th century in Poland and Austria, was the father, the teacher and foster father of Yosef Eibschitz. I think he means the Panim Me'irot. And the Panim Me'irot suggests, and I think this is different than what the Rambam would seem to imply, that, but I understand why he's saying it, that he thinks if there are three people, that would be the rabbi, meaning the person who is either going to embarrass or not embarrass the person, two other people, and then the victim of the embarrassment. So the call is to embarrass somebody outside of this circle. There are two other people watching. That will qualify as rabbim, suggest the Panim Me'irot, because we have a halacha in terms of tumah bereshut harabim. There's a completely different halacha, but it's brought in here. Tumah bereshut harabim. If there is a question of whether there's ritual impurity, there's an item that creates ritual impurity, and there are three people in the area where this question arises, so that's called tumah bereshut harabim, a suffek tumah bereshut harabim, a doubtful case of tumah in a public place, and it's considered tar. It's just a halacha about tumah, about suffek tumah, about when you have doubts about whether there's tumah there. If it's in public, then we assume that it's tar. Now, public there only means three. So if public only means three there, the Panim Me'irot says he thinks it means three here too, and therefore, if there are three people around, you'd be required not to, the Rav Yaakov Entler just said, you'd be required not to embarrass the other person, because that would be considered babi pnei chavero birabim. But a minor wouldn't count for that. Also, if you're going to embarrass, if the minor is not an adult, so it wouldn't be considered rabim. But even if you're going to embarrass the minor, he argues that since the minor doesn't feel the embarrassment as deeply, that would be a question to talk about which minors feel what embarrassment when. I think there are many, many cases where people years later make clear that as minors, an event occurred to them, and they experience it as so embarrassing that it stuck with them for a long, long time. So I don't know. Right? I don't know if that would qualify today, but that's what he claims. And then he says, but somebody who's asleep certainly qualifies. Meaning, let's say, you know, the challenge was, for whatever reason, to embarrass somebody who's sleeping, so they're not going to be embarrassed, right? Their face won't turn white because they don't know about it because they're sleeping. He says, no, that still counts because they will eventually find out about it, and then they'll be embarrassed, and that qualifies as embarrassment. So that was the first tshuva. That was Kuf Ayin Bet in Binyan Sion, and that's where he makes his main claims about this issue. Kuf Ayin Gimel, which was written on the 5th of Teveit, which is why it comes up in today's response of a day, 5th of Teveit of 1852 of Tav Reish Yud Gimel, somebody had written to him to argue about his claims. And the first argument was, the man said, I don't understand how you're paskining halacha from, it's an agadata really in the Gemara. And there's a Trumat Adeshin that says, we don't paskin halacha from these kinds of Gemaras. Right? It's sort of a more story-like Gemara. It's not an obviously specifically halachic Gemara. That's what the man had claimed. So the Rav Yaakov says, I don't know why you're reaching for Trumat Adeshin. It's not just him. He said it about a situation where you're going to use the reason for a halacha that an agadata gives and going to try to claim that that's going to affect how we apply halacha. That, he says, everybody agrees you don't do. But the fact that there's a halacha that's just an actual technical halachic fact, meaning the question of the relationship between reasons for halachot and how that affects our application of the halacha, that's, he says, a complicated question that comes up in lots of places. And it's true. When you have an agadata, that can't give you a reason that can shape your halachic reality. But if you just have a claim about what the halacha is, there's no such problem with that. And when people say, and he quotes a sefer, an older sefer called Kol HaRamaz, was a commentary on Mishnah that says, we don't learn from Midrash about halachot. He says, that's when you have a Gemara that goes against it, right? When you have a Gemara that goes against it, like with the Zohar too. If you have a Gemara that says something else, so we follow the Gemara. That's what we do. We follow our Gemara. But if our Gemara says something and nobody else claims otherwise, but it says it in an agadic way, but that's all that's said about it. See, Rav Yaakov Entler says, we learn lots of halachot from those kinds of things. We learn from Zohar too, we get halachot, right? And there's a Prichadash and a Radvaz, and everybody sort of understands this idea. Now that, important to say, becomes an important question as to when we take agadot to be technical halachic and when we don't. And he's, Rav Yaakov Entler, sort of saying, if there's no reason not to, then we do. But here in this same discussion, he had pointed out, when the Gemara had originally said, then Mabim Bechavero Barabim is like Ritzicha, is like murder. He said, I don't know if you can take that seriously, because Mavazet HaMoadot, the Gemara says, is like idolatry. So it turns out that that we don't always take that completely seriously. So it's not completely clear, but there's no fundamental idea that we don't take Gemara seriously, even if they're agadot, that we don't allow them to affect our halachic practice. That's what he says. As long as there's no contradiction, and it seems like that's the view of the Gemara, or even just the Medrash, then we tend to accept that. Then the man raised another objection, and this depends on another Gemara that's well known, and the Prima Gadim had mentioned it as well, but the Gemara says that Esther was karka olam. The Gemara has a whole challenge and a problem with how it was that Esther allowed herself to be taken by Ahasuerus to be queen, because the Gemara's assumption was that Esther and Mordechai were husband and wife. Not our topic today. The Gemara's assumption is Esther and Mordechai were husband and wife. Esther and Mordechai were husband and wife, and she's a married woman. As a married woman, to have relations with another man other than her husband is adultery, and that's a gilui arayot. It should be a harag le'avos. She should have let herself be killed, rather than letting it happen. So there's a whole couple of approaches to that issue. One approach is very famous. The Rabbeinu Tam seems to have thought that if a woman commits adultery with a non-Jew, it doesn't fully count in the sense of not that she's not a capital crime, but in the sense of her being prohibited to her husband, and therefore maybe it's not a harag le'avos. It's all discussion there. But the Gemara's basic answer is that Esther karka olam, that this gets into, and I don't want to be graphic at all, but it gets to the question of how active women are in having relations and whether that counts as an act in halacha, and that if she wasn't so physically active, that therefore it doesn't count as an action on her part. That's a discussion of its own, and you don't get into the details, but it seems not to depend specifically on how active she was. It seems to be a statement about the relative position between a man and a woman when they're having relations with each other. But for our purposes, it tells us that if the person if the question is to not commit an action and then happens, right? Let's say there was a way, this man is suggesting, it shows that if there's a way to have relations, gili arayot, sexual relations, without being active halachically, then it's not a harig val yavor. So in our terms, he says, the man asking Rabbi Yaakov Edelman the question says, so in our terms, speaking often doesn't count as a halachic act. So that's a whole discussion of its own. But for example, there are prohibitions that are transgressed purely by speech, and we generally don't give malkot for them. There are exceptions, but we generally would not give somebody lashes for them because they're called a lav she'ein bo maaseh, because there's no action there. Because speech in halacha, for many purposes, doesn't qualify as an action. So he says, if I'm going to embarrass somebody by saying something about them in public, it's not really an action halachically, and therefore, it shouldn't be a yaharig ve'al yavor. So Yaakov Edelman just says, no, that's not the same thing at all. You missed the point. When we talk about for Yeharig Vayavor purposes, when we talk about for the question of whether one has to let themselves be killed rather than transgress, we don't mean the distinction between action and non-action halacha. That's important for other purposes. But we mean whether the person is the person is considered not contributing to the action, like by Esther. So, right, I think that's what the Gemara really means. I think Rabbi Yaakov Lecher has said it much better than I did, that the Gemara means that a woman's role in the act is not as necessary, and therefore she's not considered to be the active participant in it, although she would be if she wasn't forced and whatever, whole conversation of its own, but she doesn't really do a lot in terms of initiating and making it happen, all those kinds of things. Whereas in the person embarrassing somebody else, they're clearly the actor. It's true, the action, the activity that I'm doing doesn't qualify halakhically. It's an action, but I'm certainly being an active participant. I'm the one who's making it happen. It would not occur at all without me. So therefore, he says, that's not the same thing. And even though we might halakhically agree that speaking isn't an action halakha, it doesn't matter. The person who's doing the embarrassing is doing it, and therefore it would be a relevant issue, and it would be considered an act of halbanat penei chavero barabim, of embarrassing somebody else in public. A perfect example, he says, is in halakha, and this is something people don't always realize, in halakha, idolatry can consist only of saying, you are my God. God forbid somebody should say that, but you are God, my God. You are the force that rules my life. I worry about this, just a brief transgression. I apologize for it, but I worry about this often today because I think there are many, many Jews who unwittingly don't realize what they're doing, but they really believe, and they would say things like it, that nature and science are the powers that rule their lives, and that I worry that that's actually a halachic problem because they are saying there's something other than Hashem ruling their life. They're not saying it as, and Hashem is really the force that runs it all and makes it all happen. Just it happens with such regularity that we can learn a lot about it and see how it works in general. They tend to think there's this thing called nature and the laws of nature, and those are really what rules the world. And I worry about that. In any case, for our purpose, Yaakov Ettlinger is just saying that's a speech. Right, so let's say, you know, Baal, take a straight up idol, right? Baal, or that statue. I believe that statue was my life. That's all the person has done. That is textbook idolatry. And the person has to be killed rather than say such a thing. So let's say, you know, somebody just came up to you for whatever reason, said, you know, I need you to say, you say, I will kill you unless you say, the Buddha is what rules my life. So you're not allowed to say such a thing. Because it's an act of idolatry, and therefore you would. So that's just speech, though. So Yaakov Ettlinger has just shown that speech counts for these purposes as an action, even though in many cases speech is not considered an action halakhically. When we say action here, we don't mean an action. We mean something where the person is the one doing what's going on. Then there's one last side piece that I'm going to have to skip because I took us too long, and I apologize. But there's a side piece about how we count the Avot, the patriarchs, the Jews before the time of the giving of the Torah. There is a tradition that Avram kept the whole Torah, and that would be why we would think that Tamar is relevant, right? We say Tamar shows to us that Tamar with Yehuda shows us that you have to let yourself be killed rather than transgress something, but that only makes sense if Tamar is keeping the Torah, and that only makes sense. So the man had written, Yaakov just said, even if you believe that Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov kept the Torah, there's no reason to think that Tamar kept the Torah. So Rabbi Yaakov Ettlinger thinks it's not true. He thinks all the Jews, according to that view in the Gemara, the people kept the Torah, all the Jews from the time of Avram kept the Torah. And then he says, and if they're keeping the Torah, and Tamar wasn't keeping the Torah, then their children wouldn't have been Jewish, because for non-Jews, it's not matrilineal, right? Our belief that the definition of who's a Jew goes by the mother is a Torah concept. Among non-Jews, we think that a person's nationality follows their father. So it wouldn't qualify. So therefore, that's just a side point. But fundamentally, Rabbi Yaakov Ettlinger, for the fifth of Tevet, has spoken to us about realizing that the category of Yehareg Val Yavor, things that we are must allow ourselves to be killed rather than transgress, includes not just the capital crimes of idolatry and murder and sexual immorality. They include extensions of those, and one of the little realized extensions of those is embarrassing somebody else in public, and that embarrassing somebody else in public, according to Yaakov Ettlinger, would be a Yehareg Val Yavor. We're not allowed to do it. And that is responsible a day for the fifth of Tevet. Have a great day.